this episode of Anime Pacific,
we talk about what we're watching these days.
We review the now classic 2006 anime film, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
And I review Eden of the East.
All that, and pretty much only that, on this episode of Anime Pacific.
Very exciting. Isn't it like a month late for Christmas music?
Yes, but I thought it would be a good segment into starting the new episode because...
Which is...
You hear what I hear, and that's a new episode of
Anime Pacific, episode 88, and I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is Dane. I'm trying to be more official or professional, I should say, with the beginning of these shows, because usually you're supposed to introduce yourself, and we never do. So,
well, we do on occasion, but yes, it's sporadic at best. So, yeah, I'm Dane Skaysbrook, the wacky, lovable podcaster here in Hong Kong.
That's right. I'm I'm Alex, the cynical.
Once in Japan, but now back in the exciting city of Kamloops. Canada.
That's right, in British Columbia, yes.
And
the Olympics are coming up soon in Vancouver, which is a neighboring city here. Well, neighboring, it's 3 hours away by car, but that's like neighboring in Canada. neighboring city of Vancouver, Olympics are coming up, and there's a lack of snow, which is a big problem. Like where the hills just outside, just north of Vancouver there, where they're gonna have the some of the freestyle events, like freestyle snowboarding and freestyle skiing, as I understand it. It's been too warm, you know. So there's a lack of snow. So they're gonna have to like helicopter it in. And it's gonna cost a fortune. So,
that's right.
It's a bit of a fiasco. But
yeah, they should relocate to the barren tundra of Regina, Saskatchewan.
Well, they could hold it. Yeah, they could. That's right. Well, they could hold those events up at Whistler, where they're holding the downhill events. But I don't know. They don't want to relocate because it's going to be like a logistical nightmare. So I don't know what they're thinking. But apparently, it's like the warmest winter, like on record, they've having in Vancouver right now. So it's a big, I don't know, big problem. So anyway, so that's what's going on.
Well, you know, the East Asian Games was on in Hong Kong, and they built a huge stadium just outside my school.
Did they really?
Yeah, but it's quite funny because I was telling people, and you know me, I'm the anti-sports fellow, but I was saying, oh, well, you know, everyone must be excited about the East Asian Games. And everyone said, well, you know, let me put it to you this way, East Asia is just such... It sounds, you know, epic and big and huge, but you think about it. About five of the entities of the nine that were in there were sort of somewhat Chinese principality, I suppose you could say. You know, you've got the Macau team, the Hong Kong team, the China team, the Taiwanese team.
Right.
Then you got Singapore, which is, you know, heavily influenced by China, and then you got like Palau, which is this tiny little country in Micronesia.
Palau. So, yeah, that you're getting pretty specific East Asian East Asian games to talk about.
That's right. North Kamloops games.
Yeah, like I thought the Commonwealth games were kind of a sideshow, but
yeah. Well, this thing was just. You know, this was a huge, huge thing, but, I can tell you who participated. China, Hong Kong, South Korea, Macau, Japan, North Korea, believe it or not.
Really?
Mongolia, Chinese Taipei, I'll get into that, Guam, Guam, not Palau. Okay, it was Guam. So there you go. Those are the 9 countries. These days, I see on TV...
Well, Guam's an American territory.
Yes, it is an American territory, but I suppose it's in East Asia, so...
Yes.
And they wanted to go in the game, so there you go. But, anyway, this thing, these days, if you see anything sort of issued by the government or announced by the government, they always have to say, on the news today in Chinese Taipei.
Are they saying that now on the, in the, like, even like before, I remember when I used to live in Hong Kong, I know they used to say like they used to say, you know, call it Taiwan, and then they'd say the Taiwanese leader. Like, they wouldn't say president.
Actually, I've heard them say president, but it's just mostly like, say for example, okay, here's a good example. There was a huge fireworks exhibition in Macau, and then it different countries were, you know, coming to bring their firework know-how, and one of them was Chinese Taiwan or Chinese Taipei or something like that. So it in those sort of government-funded announcements, they call it Chinese. Well, okay, Chinese Taipei is the designated name used by the Republic of China, commonly known as Taiwan, to participate in some international organizations and almost all sporting events, such as the Olympics and Asian Games. The international community commonly employs the term Chinese Taipei due to several considerations arising out of the complexities of the political status of Taiwan and cross-strait relationships with the People's Republic of China. So,
yes.
There you go.
All right, I'm sure people are thrilled about this exciting topic.
Yes, I should say it's called Chinese Taipei because, I suppose saying Chinese Taiwan would indicate that Taiwan is...
Well, yeah, there's probably some history there that I'm not entirely aware of, but...
It's very complicated, yes.
All right, well, moving... But they build a giant stadium next. Is this a permanent stadium, or is this like a temporary structure they built?
No, it's a permanent stadium, so... It's staying there, but you know, they must have spent a lot of money on this thing.
Yeah, I smell sort of pork or sort of stimulus. It was, I don't know, like a way, but I suppose the stadium's
well,
there.
Hong Kong
and I suppose,
doesn't need it.
Yeah, I suppose your school can use the stadium for sporting events or not.
Oh, I've already seen tons of schools go in there for sporting events. So yes, I don't know if my school will or not, because my school tends to do the opposite of what is convenient. So. Just have to wait and see there.
I see.
And incidentally, while we're still in this Shooting the Breeze segment, I should let everyone know that I was on the last episode. Well, actually, you can say that about every episode these days. I was on the last episode of Anime 82, which was a very interesting episode because Regan did a non-anime special. So it was all about sort of foreign animation. Not Japanese. So I reviewed The Missing Link, or Le Chanon Mahua, and Gerald from AWO reviewed Gandahar, which I had not heard of. And Ypres reviewed Twice Upon a Time, and Regan reviewed The Clone Wars. So that was a very interesting episode, and I recommend you check it out at anime82.blogspot.com, which, it was a very interesting to try and review something that was not anime.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of Ypres, Regan actually emailed me and said, where is he? Because we reviewed this, I did this review months ago, because Regan was waiting for one of the people to send the review.
Oh, that's brutal.
And it wasn't Ypres, by the way, because he sent it at the same time as me. But...
You should have just put it out. I mean, it's ridiculous that... I don't know. Anyways, continue.
What's ridiculous?
Well, I mean, what's the gap between episodes? Like...
Actually, it wasn't that long because he released episode 35 a few weeks prior, so...
All right.
Anyway, no, I think it was worth it because... it was worth it. Very good episode, so... Check it out, the official podcast of the Anime Love. And Anime World Order also reviewed Violence Jack. Now, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I released a torrent with the uncut violence, Jack. And, in some ways, how can I put this? I said this, I worded it this way in the AWO comments, and I said, I'm actually at least partially responsible for one of the earlier releases of Violence Jack Uncut. Oh. Some Italian chap studying Japanese volunteered to help translate the subs from the Uncut Italian DVD as long as I helped distribute it. I graciously agreed, having next to no prior exposure to Violence Jack. Hearing the name Go Nagai was enough. Needless to say, upon... Okay, wait, I'll just skip through. In many ways, I wonder if I am akin to those who have translated Mein Kampf. Am I contributing to history, or am I dooming others to relive it by exposing people to such stuff?
Well, why did you feel the need to sort of self-plug it all in the anime world?
Well, because Gerald mentioned that he saw one based off the Italian rip, and I'm pretty sure that's my one. And I still get people messaging me, you know, to say thank you at the Bubby Subs website that I, you know, haven't touched for quite a while. But, you know, basically, because in the review they said it was just such a, it's just such a mean-spirited, terrible video nasty. And it definitely is one of the top, or if not the top, anime video nasties of the 80s. And to believe, and just to imagine that it was originally a shonen title back in the 70s, you know, this is a show where the man's dick girlfriend gets killed by Violence Jack, so he eats her to get her power, and it's
anyway, my god,
it's very extreme, very extreme. I mean, and
sounds
the torrent's
like a,
still there.
Sounds like a hentai or something.
It's not a hentai. Like I said, it's a shonen. However,
it's a shonen.
It is a shonen. It's 1970s shonen.
I don't know, anything with a dick girl sounds right up your alley, but I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but it did have full-on hardcore kind of penetration scenes, although it's not technically a hentai. It's just one of those, you know, the 80s represented a surplus of money and kind of experimental extremism, and Violence Jack embodies both of those things. But my torrent is still out there, and it's still floating around. I'm not personally seeding it anymore, but there's plenty of people who are. So, if you wish to lose your soul, it's out there.
All right. Well,
I've read some of the manga, which is good. Ah,
well, speaking
now,
of... I'm trying to segue into something else. Speaking of...
speaking of manga...
All right, go ahead.
I actually have a good segue. Well, I'm thinking of doing a video product review. Remember I was telling you about this yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I bought something called a Benz, not as in Mercedes, BNSS X639, which is what they call an MP5 player, which is really, you know, it's an audio, video, and picture player, a portable one. But what's different about this one is that the screen is really big for a portable player. It's almost 9 inches, 8.9 inches. So it's huge, and often these... things have a resolution of 800 by 400 or something, like some widescreen resolution. But this one is actually a bit higher than that. It's almost 720p. So for something that small to have such a high resolution, everything looks great as long as you're watching it at that resolution. One of the benefits is this thing makes for an ideal manga scan reader, because you just rotate the images sideways and then hold this thing sideways, and it's almost the size of, you know, one of the
like
middle sizes.
It's like the size of an American comic book, I guess you could say.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So, you know, I can get all these manga scans and read it on the bus with, you know, without the sort of detriment that you usually have with trying to look at manga scans. You know, it has to be on a computer or on a screen. Well, it's still on a screen, but at least it feels more like a comic book. And the high resolution doesn't hurt your eyes.
Yeah,
so.
That sounds awesome. I mean, it's too bad. I wonder if that's available. And are you watching... now, last week, or not 2 weeks ago, I guess, I talked about Gantz. Have you been watching... reading that?
Yes. You know, it's funny... Now that I think about it, that's a perfect segue from Violence Jack, because that extreme episode I was talking about was actually directed by Ichiro Itano, who, you know, directed the Guards TV series. But yes, I have been reading it. I've read the first volume on the bus. So,
first? Oh, you're starting from the beginning again then?
No, I'm starting from the beginning again because I watched the TV series quite a few years ago.
Oh, I thought you had already read some of the manga.
I did, but that was even longer. So just for, you know, as a completionist, I just thought...
Yeah, that probably makes sense. But it's so brutal. Like, now, waiting, like, 2 weeks for, like, another, like, 10 pages. Like chapter 311 just came out. Mm. And now it's, like, I read that, like, last week. And now I got to wait until, like, the... in the middle of February for chapter 312, and
yeah,
it's brutal, man. I don't know how people kept this up for 5 years. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's why I'm going through it, but I'm trying not to finish it too fast because I know that'll happen. It's less brutal to know that you've still got some there than it is to know that you've got nothing and you've got to wait for
it. Well, yeah, like it's like me with sort of computer games or even like sort of a good TV show. Like, I know, like, once I finish it, that's the end and I won't be able to keep playing it or watching it. So I sort of like almost like stop playing or watching it, knowing I want to savor that last chunk. It's like with Dragon Age, and I know I'm in the home stretch and I don't want it to be over. So I've sort of stopped playing it. Now I'm into other stuff right now, playing Europa.
It's like
Universal.
When I was playing Oblivion and I was, you know, 100 hours into the game, and then I was just like picking flowers and stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Well, like, there's so many mods out now, it just sort of extends the life endlessly. Eh?
Get your own winery mod and all sorts of...
Yeah, you sort of look forward to, like, expansions coming out. Speaking of looking forward to stuff, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but HBO is making that Game of Thrones...
you've mentioned it several times.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. And it looks like I've been following winteriscoming.net. winter-is-coming.net is an awesome website for Game of Thrones news. And apparently the pilot has been seen by the HBO people, HBO head honchos, and things are looking up for it getting picked up. So it's still not guaranteed yet, but it's definitely very, very favorable that it's going to get picked up. And if all goes well, we might see it that maybe in end of 2011. So fuck, it's a long wait. Talk about brutal, man. I almost wish I hadn't heard of it. I'd rather just for it to come out. And it's like, I don't know, like, it's bad enough waiting for... like Lost or something, which, you know, is going to come out in like a, you know, like half a year or something. But this is just crazy. Something that might even get picked up. It's like when you fall, I must be like one of those, like those Lord of the Ring nerds who knew that Peter Jackson was filming the whole thing and it's going to come out years from now.
Well, I felt the same way during Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. Yes, Star Wars.
Oh, boo.
My Star Wars flag proudly.
Screw you, George Lucas. Yeah.
I just for those of you that don't remember, I remember speaking to Kauri after Attack of the Clones came out. And I said, oh, did Alex like it? And he said, oh, yeah. She said, oh, yeah, that was a lot better. That was pretty good, eh? And then as the months went by, Alex got swept up in geeky internet fervor, and he was like, oh, it sucked, man! Attack of the Clones, man!
No, it just got worse. Like, when you come out... after you spend, like, $10, you want something to be... You don't want to feel like you've wasted your money. So, like, you're...
The wow factor.
No, not the wow factor. It's like the I did not just waste $20 factor. So you come out of there, you want to, like... make sort of self-justification. Oh, that was not bad. It was a popcorn movie or whatever. Like, you don't want to, like, you're sort of saying to yourself, no, I didn't just flush $20 down the toilet. You know? So, you know, coming out of those movies, like, after those years of anticipation, seeing your childhood raped in front of you, you know, you don't want to come out of there sort of admitting that to yourself. You go into this denial stage. Now I'm in the acceptance stage. That you know.
I'm also in the acceptance stage that it is the best movie ever made. So.
Oh my god!
Incidentally, let's seeing as we're talking about the wow factor, Avatar is probably going to become it already is
the top
grossing movie in the world. But
have you? Yeah, we talked about this last week, though, didn't we?
Yes, we did. But I just wonder how much of that is wow factor when you watch that in 2D. You know, is
oh,
it
it's all
anyway?
Wow factor. I mean, like, it's like the plot. I don't want to rehash all this, but the story just isn't that good. It's lame. They should have done The Heart of Darkness, but in a sci-fi theme. Instead, they did Dances with Wolves or Pocahontas or, you know, any
Actually,
Last
I can
Samurai.
Tell you one thing it did better than Dances with Wolves was that, you know, when I think back to this, it's just so offensive. But if you remember in Dances with Wolves, the whole thing was, yes, Kevin Costner, starts to sympathize or empathize with the natives and starts to become, he starts to become one, basically. But then, oh, look, luckily, we have a white woman as a romantic interest. Do you remember that? How he fell in love with, there was another white
Dude,
woman.
Dude, it's been so long since then. I don't remember it. I'm sorry. It's
okay. Basically, Kevin Costner, there's a woman that just happens to be white and happens to have been orphaned by the natives, you know, since she was born. So you have the convenience of it was just so racist. So I hate that sort of crap. It's like that Will Smith movie. Anyway, okay, no, I'm not going to get onto there. Otherwise, I'll be,
Yeah, we've vowed to keep this shorter. Like, the last two episodes have been, like, three-hour marathons. Although I'm sure people like that, you know, since we're coming out every two weeks now. People, I guess, don't mind. Instead of having a one-hour show or one-and-a-half-hour show every week, you get, like, a three-hour marathon every 2 weeks. Yeah, they don't mind. Yes. But
yes, and I should let those people know, because I got several messages and emails and stuff from last week, saying, is there an episode this week? Is there an episode this week? And basically, it's almost official that we are we release our show on a fortnightly basis. So,
and fortnightly means every 2 weeks for those people who don't know. Okay, yeah. And by the way, my new Binu as a verb is catching on like fire. Regan made a posted, I watched Toradora on your suggestion and I beanooed all over my pants. And then Jake said, I might actually have to check out that beanoo bait show, Toradora. And guys, this is so beanoo. I'm loving it.
I was just saying how getting on eBay has already become part of the anime podcast lexicon.
Well,
which is,
speaking of Binu bait, the new Bakemonogatari Blu-ray DVD was released, the fourth one, and I believe that's the one that contains the episodes that I did not particularly like, even though I gave it my favorite anime of last year rating last week or last episode. The episodes, I believe, thinking now, episode 10 has, or maybe 9 and 10, 10 and 11, I can't quite remember, has the slightly pervy sort of sixth grader who, plenty of lolly fan service there, and it was slightly disturbing, but what's her name? Nadeko, I guess, is her name, but in the Blu-ray release, it's been sexed up even more, so Binu will be all over that completely. But
come on.
But so it's been beanooed up, and but I'm gonna get it anyway because that's such a great show. Bakemonogatari.
Yeah, it beat, for those of you that didn't listen to that episode, it beat Alex's best of 2009. It beat Darker Than Black season 2. So.
Yeah, and you know, so there were so many great, I don't know, so there was Toradora, which I liked last year, if you count that as a last year show. There was Magnitude 8.0, Darker Than Black, Bakemonogatari, but boy, I just had so much fun watching that Bakemonogatari that I had to give it my best of 2009 rating. And the guy who did that also did which I didn't know, he also did Katana Gatari, which...
Oh, that new show that's...
yeah, I watched the first episode of that, and I'll talk about that in the next segment, in our What We're Watching segment. But, yeah, so I did not... Going in after... Well, I didn't realize that, but I didn't find out till later. But speaking of something else that you must see, ever heard of the store American Apparel?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know if... maybe they're not in Hong Kong. But this is a store famous for its... very sexy advertising, you know, and very sort of controversial advertising, a bit like sort of like Calvin Klein, you know, in the 90s, you could say they'd have like these almost like underage.
I can tell you about Calvin Klein because there, I've probably mentioned this on the show before, but near where I live, there's an outlet shopping center and there's this Calvin Klein shop. And in the beginning, when I first moved to this district, there was, for more than a year, there was, as soon as you'd go up the escalator, there would be this giant black schlong looking at you, tucked away in tight, what they call tighty-whitey underwear. This I don't know, it could have been Damon Honto or one of those famous guys, but it was just wearing these tight, white underwear, and this thing poking in your face. And they finally put it down, but unfortunately now they've just replaced it with a white schlong. So.
Well, yeah.
Oh wow, this American Apparel, they have user submissions.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is their new campaign. Like this American Apparel is famous for having very sort of sexy advertising, and especially with like women's sexiness. So what they're doing now is completely. It's amazing viral, especially for guys, viral campaign on this website. It's a very cheesy search for the best bottom in the world, so the best ass, and so it's getting women to post pictures of their bums in American Apparel, usually thongs or underwear, and it's friggin' brilliant. And of course, like I found this through a Huffington Post link. And of course, all the you know, the women on there. Oh, what an outrage! You know, but you come here. These women don't seem to mind. They're all posting pictures of their bums. So
they've got a Chinese website for the mainland. Oh, but they don't have any bum competition.
So this is but anyway, you go here and you rate the ass of these chicks who have posted, and on a scale of 1 to 5, and you can spend hours doing this. It's catching on. The only issue is that some jerks, like some guys that are assholes, will get in there and post pictures of their ass, and it's very disturbing. It taints everything because you don't know. Like sometimes, most of them are very obvious. It's like clearly a guy, like you know, hairy legs, and it's like, oh, gross. And you know, the comments are under all there, like, oh, that's nasty. What are you doing, you asshole, ruining this? But you know, some of them, but it taints everything else now because, like, you're not, like, some of them, unless, like, you see, like, clear boobage, like, some of these shots, like, you can, like, they sort of angle it so that it's obviously a woman. But some other ones, like, you're like, okay, I'm 90% sure this is a chick, but maybe it's a guy with shaved legs and he's really queer and you know, maybe this, you know, there's a chance this could be a guy next, you know. It's tainting everything. These jerks who get on there and ruin it. But mostly it's great. So, and you can rate all these women. And I guess whoever gets the highest score, they get like a modeling contract or something. So,
wow.
Yeah, like I don't know if you can see the same pictures I can, but that Heidi chick, who's hot, one of the highest scorers, that looks awesome. So yeah, anyway, so I'm sure you can. Also, I'm sure you can. Let me send you a link to this one. This one isn't in the top 10, but take a look at this ass. She's lying on her bed, pink thong. That's the perfect ass. So yes. Anyways, this is a great website, American Apparel. What brilliant advertising. And I think we want more advertising like this, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. So we want to support this campaign. So Anne.
I haven't seen any black girls though.
Who cares? Anne from Oslo. Cheers to you, and I'm gonna give you 5 stars.
Okay. This is Annie Ass, is it? Oh, okay, I found a black girl.
is that your famous name? Oh, that's
buttocks.
True. Yeah, that's why you don't see any Asians on here, because usually Asians don't have good asses.
Oh, beg to differ. But anyway, you know, it's funny because at the website that we have that we now link to, that's another thing I forgot to mention. AniPack, our blog, now has its own feed, which might not mean much to any of you, but
anyway, it didn't mean anything to me either.
Yeah.
You just made a post on that. You never did post about
2000 and the 2000s in review. I will.
Yeah,
I've just
yeah.
been busy and, with and university stuff.
Yeah, and you were going to post about, not Lolly, you were going to post about something, I forget.
Hmm.
But you did make a post about this Conan Leno controversy.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize it was actually put on the show.
Yeah, well, like this Taiwanese news broadcast made this crazy animation about the trying to explain the Conan Leno controversy. And
yeah.
It's just so over the top and nuts with Conan turns into like a green monster, Incredible Hulk type guy. And Leno is wearing this superhero uniform. It's just so over the top crazy. Conan even played it on his own show. So yeah,
that was hilarious.
But anyway, so you can check that out. If you missed it, you can check that out on the AniPack blog. So I think that's a pretty extensive segment, Dane. Maybe we should move on to our what we're watching.
Yes, well, just before we do that, I was just going to say that there was a China smack. There was, I don't know why this is such a big deal, but Chinese black couple on Shanghai Metro.
Oh, yeah.
But this one's funny. Is it not okay for others to like eating chocolate abalone? Abalone is slang for the female part because it looks similar. But
it does.
Yes. The photograph captures the point. NIGGAs have great butts. This friend has good fortune.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I thought it was going to be about there was a black guy and a Chinese chick in the stripped naked in some sort of boat in an amusement park. I thought you were going to talk about that, but I guess not.
No. I didn't even know what that is. So, actually, finding this kind of person to have sex with is very satisfying. Great.
This is from September. So that's why I didn't notice it. Okay.
Her appearance and body are not bad. Two black legs holding you. Oh my, this is what heaven is. So, it's quite funny.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're, like I said, oh no, I think I found one of those guy ones. Oh no, it's a woman.
Okay. You're surfing through the butts on that website, aren't you? Oh, that's great. Yes.
Yes, okay, so let's move on to the what we're watching
segment. I was tempted to rant about the clusterfuck that is American politics, but I've decided not to. It is a podcast in itself. God, one blood. Okay, I am going to rant about one we call it a by-election in. I don't know if you call it by-election in Canada or in Australia, but one by-election in the States, as they call it, a special election. And suddenly, the world's ended. The entire legislative agenda is out the window, and you're going to have 3 years of paralysis just because of one by-election in Massachusetts. That's crazy. I don't know. What a clusterfuck of a system. That's all I got to say. Anyways, let's move on to what we're watching.
Yes.
Hey, gang. Check out what other people have had to say about the Alpha Paddle podcast.
But anyway, it's all subjective, and
no,
it's pointless to argue about this. And then Kent from Upper Paddle will say, "Well, excuse me, but I think babbity babbity baba," and then it'll go on forever. Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't really that good. What else have people been saying about me? Kent is a prick.
Yeah, if you could, like, lock Kent in the bathroom or something, then it'd be fun.
Kent from Upper Paddle. Wow, I've been going for 3 years, and that's the best I can do. But if you're morbidly curious or just can't get enough of anime, video game, or movie podcasts, check me out at uppapaddle.com. That's UPAPADDLE.com. Or search for Uppapaddle in the iTunes directory. The Uppapaddle Podcast. Not really that good of a podcast.
What are we watching?
Okay, it's a semi-regular segment called What We're Watching, which is good because we don't want it to cannibalize on our Shooting the Breeze segment or our review segment, so I think this sort of thing deserves its own segment.
Yes.
So tell us what you think, of course, in our comments section in animepacific.blogspot.com.
Yes, this is not meant to be an actual sort of review this of a show or whatever. It's just give you an idea of what our thoughts are on any particular show at any particular moment. So I'm going to talk about Chubra, Katana Gatari, and Durarara, which is what...
Well, with this new MP5 player I was telling you, I can basically fit in about 3 or 4 episodes per day on the bus going to and from work.
How long does it take you to get to work on that bus, by the way?
Much faster than the MTR. The bus takes usually between 45 to 50 minutes, depending on the traffic. In extreme cases, it could even take an hour in the morning, never in the afternoon. Afternoon's faster. Yeah, average 45 to 50 minutes.
Well,
so that's a good 2 episodes in there.
Yeah, plus there's all that time when you're actually at work to watch, so...
Oh, if only that were true, if only that were true.
Yeah, so I saw episode 2 of Chubra. You're not on Pins and
Needles?
Yes,
I haven't seen episode 2 of Chubra yet.
Have you seen episode 1?
I saw episode 1, that's right, yes.
Alright, well, aren't you dying to know what I thought of episode 2?
I absolutely... cannot sleep.
Well, I gotta say, I was pretty excited about episode 1. I was hoping for, as you heard last episode, a kind of sort of screwball, golden boy, colorful type comedy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know, what I liked about that first episode was the sort of the crazy, you know, the thought she was a prostitute kind of subplot, and I thought I was hoping for more of that, you know, sort of crazy, sort of Three's Company, Golden Boy style hijinks, kind of screwball comedy, but it got all serious. And how can you have, the whole premise is so stupid that, you know, you can't do something serious about something so just so intrinsically crazy. And what I didn't like about the first episode was the whole sort of Binu aspects, like it you know, the fact that they were all sort of so young, and it was just so pervy watching it. It was just very Binu, and episode 2, the whole thing has been Binu'd right up, and it's serious, and they're still young, and they're still talking about underwear and they're it's way too serious about a topic that is just so, it's such a crazy story that this doesn't work at all, and there's not enough of the sort of screwball. There's like one sort of throwaway line where there's one sort of very brief scene, like 10 seconds long, where one of the classmates thought that the two of the main characters there, that they thought they might be lesbians, you know. And if the whole episode was the classmates mistaking those two for lesbians, then that would have been hilarious, you know. Could have had a chance to be a hilarious screwball golden boy comedy. But I don't think it's going to turn out the way. And I've already downloaded episodes 3 and 4. And I haven't been able to. I haven't watched it just because the second episode was just so terrible. I don't want to subject myself to the next two episodes. I might be bailing on this, but I don't know. And I, plus, if it just feels so skeevy watching this show, that and it feels so pervy, and not in a way that like watching Ladies versus Butlers. I didn't feel pervy watching that, even though it's probably more. Salacious than this chew bra thing.
Yeah, I did feel a little bit creepy watching the first episode. I have to admit.
Yeah, so it's but at least I could justify it. This is a screwball comedy. I'm here for the laughs, like in Colorful, you know, or Golden Boy, you know.
But, oh yeah, well, Golden Boy is different. I mean, you know it. At least Golden Boy is about people who are
they're adults,
older than
exactly. Now, if this Chubra had been, you know, if they had been like college students or something exploring the world of like wacky fetishes, then maybe I could buy into it. But the fact that they're so young and the whole thing is just so binu that I'm trying to shoehorn my new verb in as much as possible, my new adjective/verb/noun in as much as possible. but I don't know. It's just I can't take it. So I can no longer recommend Chubra. Unfortunately, I had high hopes. And I might still watch episodes 3 and 4 just because I have them sitting on my hard drive. But
right. Yeah. Well, okay. Then I will watch episode 3 and then see what happens.
Yes. So the next thing I've watched, I've watched episodes 2 and 3 of Durarara, and I have episode 4 sitting on my hard drive. Looking forward to seeing that. It continues to be good. Episode 2. Remember how I explained episode 1 was has a great setup to the series in that this introduced the main character, this high school boy going to going to Tokyo. They had him walking around basically Tokyo or Shibuya, introducing the characters in the neighborhood and as a way of introducing the viewer to the series. This episode 2 basically took the same time frame but from the perspective of a different character.
Which is kind of what they. Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
It was kind of what they did in that, with the other one, Bakano, in a way. It was non-linear in its storytelling, kind of like a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah. Well, I was a bit. Yeah. For me, watching this, like, it was a big gap between the two. Like from episode 1 when I saw it, and episode 2, there was like a long gap between viewings.
Oh,
right. So it was so confusing to me. I couldn't remember what had happened in the first one. Maybe I should have gone back and watched the first episode again. But it was a bit confusing. That's just because the long. But then my memory got refreshed and things sort of fit together a bit better. Episode 3, the story looks like it's gonna be moving. It's moving along and it's back to the sort of main characters. And you see more of some of the other characters they introduced in the first episode. So I'm liking it. It's hard to tell the animation, you know, exactly how well it's going to go. But the animation continues to be superb. The story's interesting. The characters, well, it's hard to say yet. It looks to be sort of archetypes at the moment. But we'll see. I'm going to continue to watch it. I'm not bailing yet. I'm looking forward to seeing episode 4 and episode 5. So continuing to be thumbs up for Durarara. Katana Gatari, episode 1.
That's the OVA series, sure. Isn't it? The one with a very interesting art style, am I right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And going into this, I'm a bit hesitant about this art style, because like when I started playing it, immediately my wife, Kaori, she said... this is a kid's show. What are you watching this for? You know, basically. It has a bit of like a One Piece feel to it, you know? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't think it's a kid's show. And I, you know. But this is, I didn't realize it at the time. Watching this, like, first of all, I watched the high definition version. The animation's quite good,
well,
very
an OVA,
good.
So... Well, I suppose it doesn't mean what it used to mean in the 90s and 80s and 90s, but usually, you know, OVA denotes sort of better animation, better budget,
Don't know if that's still the case.
Yeah, I liked the character design. It's good. I mean, I have no real complaints. Just my complaint is what I had before. That's just so kiddish. I feel like I'm watching something for kids. And I just, as a 33-year-old guy, I don't know if I can, it's better enough than watching cartoons.
I thought we've transcended that.
No, well, maybe. But, I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know. There's something just cultural that's hard to overcome, you know. It's just, if it just had more of a, you know, Ghost in the Shell production IG look to it, I could buy in a bit more. But the whole thing is just so shonen that...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really like the art style that I see here. It's very colorful.
Well, yeah, okay. But all right. Well, the chick, for example, you know, she looks like their clothes or outfit is quite hot and sexy. But, with this kiddified art style, it doesn't really come across entirely well. And there are many opportunities for fan service where she's sort of falling over, but they don't take those chances. So I'm beginning to get the feeling that this whole series is going to be it is geared toward kids.
But I see it labeled here as a seinen show.
Well, they say that, but I don't know. I don't see. Where's my fan service?
Well, yes.
No. Well, I don't know.
Judging by a lot of seinen, where's my rape? Is probably what you're probably going to ask. But,
well, that chick gets tied up, and
right. Well, if this were in America, what would it be rated?
It's a kids' show. There was no swearing. The violence was very minor. But there was a lot of it was very dialogue heavy,
okay.
And you know, watching this, I thought I didn't know at the time that it was by the Bakemonogatari guy, the same I guess mangaka. So watching this, I'm like, boy, some of this dialogue is quite good, and it reminds me of Bakemonogatari. It's quite funny, and some laugh out loud moments.
Yeah,
the back and forth between the two main characters. Was very reminiscent of Bakemonogatari, and I was like, boy, you know, this is you know, could be quite good. But there are other moments like where basically the plot of this is you have 12 powerful katanas in Japan, and So the main character is one Chika, who is a master at, I guess, sort of a karate style of fighting, martial art. He's a he doesn't use a sword. So in the translation, they kept calling him a master of the swordless school of fighting, which is probably a strange translation. But anyways, his father was exiled to an island off the coast of Japan. And so he's been brought, but his father passed away, but he hasn't left the son, Shichika, who hasn't left the island. He lives there with his sister. He lived there since he was born. But he's like the descendant of this, the head of this school of martial arts. He's a master at it. And one day he gets visited by a woman, Togame. And she is on a quest to find these 12 swords for the shogunate. Apparently they've fallen into hands of sort of rebel-type figures. And these swords are very powerful. So they need to get these swords back. And so this woman, Togame, visits the island in an attempt to get this guy, Shichika, to help her retrieve these swords. And she's getting him because he doesn't use swords in his martial arts style. So he has no incentive to keep these swords, which are very powerful. So he might be sort of a fair or a figure who won't sort of fall to the dark side in sort of Star Wars terms, like these other.
Oh, he's like Frodo Baggins.
Maybe. Anyways, so that's the setup, and you've got a good dynamic between, as I said, between this Togame and Shichika, who a good sort of back and forth, and it looks like there's going to be sort of a Bakemono style romance between them. Hopefully, it's hard to tell since it's only the first episode. My worry is, never mind the art style, which hopefully can be overcome. My worry is that it's going to fall into bad guy of the week, in that, in the first episode, right away, you know, one of the guy's enemies who has the swords, he followed this Togame to the island, and it, you know, he's trying, you know, so immediately, right away, first episode, you get in sort of a battle between Shichika and one of the guys who has the 12 swords. There was that typical complaint from Gantz was he had a lot of these scenes where these guys sort of standing around talking while they're doing the fighting, you know, and it's sort of, you know, I can only take so much of that, you know. If it's like that every week where you're going to have like 30 minute action scene, say, where they talk and sort of taunt each other as they're doing the fighting for 30 minutes, no matter how good the dialogue is, I'm going to bail, you know. So my hope is that they try to, you know, every sort of enemy swordmaster that they come across, I hope they have a different way of retrieving the sword. You know, maybe they sneak in and try to steal it, or maybe they try to trick the sword from him or something, you know, something more than just defeating him in combat and taking the sword, you know. No matter how clever the enemy sword master is, and in this one, this guy's sort of a shapeshifter, and he's able to sort of change shape and in order to, I don't know how, but he's able to sort of shapeshift into different people's forms and when he does combat. So I don't know. So basically, I'm giving it a thumbs up. I'm going to watch episode 2, but I'm nervous about the future. I liked some of the dialogue. I liked the back and forth between the two main characters, but there was a lot of it, and I'm hesitant about the sort of bad guy of the week sort of theme here. But I like the source. I loved Bakemonogatari, as we all know, and it's by the same light novel author. So I'm going to give episode 2 a chance, definitely.
Okay, well, what I've been watching since I got this little toy of mine is Soten no Ken, because despite working on quite a few of the episodes as a timer and quality control and some other different jobs, I had never actually watched it, start to end. Well, it only just finished getting released. I promised myself, this is just kind of a thing with me. I usually don't watch the things I'm involved in until it's done. I don't know why. I'm afraid it'll breed complacency or something. But anyway, I'm starting to watch it now. I'm about a quarter of the way through, and I think I won't talk about it here. I'll probably do a full review of that, because as you recall, I reviewed just the first episode in our very first episode of Anime Pacific, which doesn't exist. It was all a dream.
Oh, that's right. Despite somebody in the comment section said they're gonna dig it up anyway, despite our attempts to hide it.
Oh well. That person must really hate us. What can I say? Yes. Okay. So, that's what we're watching, and we'll give you our opinions next episode on how some of these shows are going, or if you've seen anything new. If you have any suggestions for shows, then you can email us at animepacific@gmail.com or leave a comment in our website.
Well, especially for Dan, because he doesn't like, you don't like watching episodes one at a time. Like you probably won't even watch these shows that I've been talking about, like Durarara, until it's all out and complete, eh?
Well, I've been watching Cobra. Well, I've only watched the first episode of that, actually.
See, there we go. You know.
Yeah, it's more about discipline, I think. To be honest, it's more about self-discipline when it comes to this stuff. And I've got such a backlog. Oh my goodness. So anyway, if you do have a suggestion, and you really want me to, and you'll won't ever listen to the show again unless I watch this show, then let me know, or Alex.
All right.
Okay, so moving on, we are going to review The Girl Who Leapt
Through Time.
Very exciting. Grando kakete ku anata no senaka wa So, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which is also having a live-action movie adaptation, but...
A book from the, I guess, 60s, actually, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. There's been numerous adaptations. I guess it was a movie or two in the 70s.
Yeah, well, this film is actually, I suppose you can kind of say, it's like Total Recall, the film, in that it started out to be a straight adaptation, and then it eventually kind of became a Saito sequel. So, it's directed by someone who prior directed Digimon Adventure,
really?
The TV series. That's right, yes. Digimon Adventure, the film.
Digimon
the movie.
So are you talking about, wait a minute, are you talking about the live action, or are you talking
the
about
anime
the
film?
The...
Okay. Yes.
Oh, I made a mistake. It was, the book is 1976.
Okay, well anyway, it's a lot later than, it's a lot earlier than the anime. This thing's been around for a long time. But anyway, this guy, Mamoru Hosoda, is probably, I mean, in many ways, like Satoshi Kon or Miyazaki, he's, I think, the next big thing. And judging by his latest film, Summer Wars, he's not a one-hit wonder.
Summer Wars, is that even out yet?
Japan.
I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah, you're right, you're right. I'm thinking of the DVD release, which is coming out in March, which is, what I'm waiting for. That's why I watched The Girl Leapt Through Time, because I had heard about this Summer Wars thing. I'm like, oh, when's that DVD coming out? Oh, in March. And somebody in passing said this is Summer Wars was, I guess, eagerly anticipated because the previous film, A Girl Who Leapt Through Time, was widely praised. So I thought, I better check that out. So,
yeah, and, it's good to have a big anime film that's, as much as I adore Miyazaki's films, but it's good to have a big event film that's not just Miyazaki.
Yeah. It's good for the industry.
Good for the industry, that's right. And this was animated by Madhouse, who were one of my favorite, if not my favorite, studio, and ended up being very successful both critically and financially. So, without further ado, let's actually get into the meat of the story. Yes, and it's about a girl called Makoto Kono, not very different from Makoto from. Goes to the Shell.
Yes. And,
she is depicted as a very normal high school girl. She's sexy in that any high school girl is sexy, I suppose, but she's not sexualized, if you know what I mean. She's not deliberately, like we said, I think it's the one thing we did say before when we announced we were going to review this was that there are about, I'd say, 24 scenes where there is great potential for panty shot, and
That's right.
Not a single one has ever shown.
Yeah, and she's not like Senju Nohara type sort of sexualized character.
Yes.
So you're not, or even like the Togame chick from Katana Gatari. You know, she. So you're not really disappointed that there's a lack of fan service, because it's like seeing kind of like seeing your sister. You know, who wants to see like your sister underwear or something? You know, very non-sexual kind of. Just sort of typical schoolgirl character, and you're not really disappointed when there's been a lack of fan service.
Yeah, you're right. So,
but anyways,
yes, okay, go.
So, anyways, she is a typical high school girl, and she is a bit of a tomboy in that she has her two best friends, I guess, are guys, and very sort of pally relationship. Although I guess later on in the movie, she sort of has doubts as to, you know, maybe she has more feelings that for these two guys than she sort of initially realizes.
Yep.
But anyway, she's sort of a tomboy character, and one day she is in the lab putting some books away, and she stumbles across a ring, and.
That she finds out that she has to deliver this ring into the mouth of Mount Mordor, and she's joined by.
<That's> right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this film, as the title denotes, it involves time. So, you know, she's in her school, and she sort of encounters something, and she doesn't quite know. A ring in this case, and someone sort of dashes away. And she doesn't know who it is. And thus starts her adventure.
You've got a good memory. So somebody has left this ring here, I guess. So one day, she's going back home from school, and there's a train crossing at the bottom of the hill on her way back home from school, and as she's going home. Her brakes fail on her bicycle, and she falls onto the tracks of this, and she falls in the path of an oncoming train, and gets killed. Or
that's
does
the end
she?
Of the film. I mean, because it's real. It's an epic tragedy.
That's the very beginning. So I'm not spoiling anything. But with the power of this ring, she sort of discovers she has the ability. She finds herself pulled back like 10 or 15 seconds earlier, so she's able to avoid this whole avoid her own death in a way. And she discovers that she has this power thanks to this ring of sort of of leaping backward in time to correct. Or change events.
Yeah, and that's
and she sort of abuses the power in order to sort of just make her life easier.
You know,
that's
the beauty of it. She doesn't go back in time and kill Hitler or something. She does it to get first dibs on ice creams and get better grades on a test. It's just very sort of. Simple things.
Trivial sort of stuff a schoolgirl would do, and you totally believe it. And it's a very sympathetic character, so you're sort of rooting for her. But every time she goes back, she sort of changes stuff, and she sort of changes things that maybe she didn't, she sort of realizes were a mistake to change. Like at one point, a boy sort of confesses to her that he has feelings for her. And she's embarrassed by it. So she goes back and reverses that.
So she avoids the confrontation every single time.
Yeah, he keeps trying to... But every time she goes back and changes it, stops that from happening, somehow the boy finds a different way of sort of confessing to her. So in order to avoid that sort of embarrassing situation, she goes back again, completely cuts this poor boy out of her life. And she finds that... maybe she should have done that. She said she sort of misses him and misses his company, and maybe that, it's maybe not always good to avoid confrontation and avoid maybe painful thing is that, that you have to let them play out and, you know, sometimes live your life. That's part of life, you know, and that's sort of one of the lessons of the movie. And, yeah, it's brilliantly done.
It is a super tearjerker, I have to say.
It's
I don't care what anyone said. I was whining like a bitch at the end of the film. Luckily, Connie was asleep on the sofa, so she didn't see it. But,
I don't know if it's particularly, I don't know if I'd call it, say it's a tearjerker, but it's nobody particularly, I don't think anybody,
there's no Bambi-like
death.
No, but I just think it's, I don't know, I just found the ending, or the last half an hour.
Well, you start to feel for the characters, and you get invested in relationships.
I mean, and as we have begun to praise in our maturing age, we before we'd praise, action scenes and stuff like that, but now we kind of praise background and setting, and they get the setting just right. It feels real, you know, the park where they always go to play. You know, just like when we praise Darker Than Black for it, because it's drawn in such a real, natural way, it feels realer than real. You can appreciate it more than just, say, you know, live-action film. Because someone has gone to the detail to, you know, depict it that way.
Yeah, and the characters are so real, and they're not just sort of one-dimensional, like, stereotypes. Like, oh, this one's a tsundere type, and this one's a, you know, shy, nerdy type. You know, they're very real, and you get invested in them, and you're pulling for them. And I think we can both safely say that we both highly recommend this movie.
It was the best film of 2006, definitely the best anime film of 2006, as far as I'm concerned. And it should be mentioned, we mentioned this is a Saito sequel. It turns out, and this is not a big spoiler, but it turns out that Makoto's ability
are you sure? I think you're going to be spoiling it. I don't think you should say this.
Is actually from.
I know you. I know where you're going. Don't.
And this is actually a Star Trek prequel. Okay. So there we go.
That's right. Yeah. No. I know where you're going. Don't spoil.
Well, anyway,
that is
without spoiling it, I'll say that connection is referring to the original novel, and that's why it's a Saito sequel.
I wonder when the live action movie comes out, is it like a live action adaptation of this anime, or is it another adaptation of the book?
Yeah,
from like 30 years
ago. I just think this animated film is so good. I have to ask myself, why the hell make a live action one as well, unless it's got something different to offer than the film did? I'm hoping, like you said, it's based on the original book and not on this film. So,
well, the only reason I could say maybe for easier overseas distribution or something, you know, for whatever reason, you know.
Now, it definitely bears mentioning that the author of this novel, who is called Yasutaka Chuchoi. I'm using Cantonese grammar there, but because T-S-U is like Chu. But anyway, she is no... Her works are no stranger to anime adaptations because she also wrote the original novel that Paprika was adapted into.
Yeah, I'm just looking at her biography. She's 75 years old now. I guess that makes sense. The book was written in 1976, but but by the way, what's going on in the background there? Connie's like, babbling up a storm
as you know, Australia's got some of the worst internet in the world. It's like $1 billion for like 100K, and my mother just upgraded her 3 gig a month limit, so. Now, my mother, you know, she's got more bandwidth, so she wants to see my daughter in the webcam more. And now she's giggling and singing
I see.
And stuff.
Hopefully you can filter that all out because it's kind of distracting. But all right, anyway, so let's that's that. Girl up through time, two thumbs up from each of us, and I want to do a quick review of Anime East.
Good evening, Anime Pacific listeners. I know you're all tuned in because Anime 82 has not had a new episode, so I am sorry to put you through another episode of Anime Pacific. Now, this is a response, a voicemail, if you will. Mr. Alex had asked that I leave a voicemail because Mr. Dane, who, of course, is the anime part of Anime Pacific, you know, he contributed a lot to the Anime 82 show. That's www.anime82.blogspot.com. And so he said I should maybe leave a voicemail. So here, Mr. Alex, my arch nemesis, here is a voicemail for you, kind sir. First of all, I would like to welcome all the American listeners, all the disgruntled American listeners of, I guess all two of you that are left on Anime Pacific, I'd like to welcome you. Come over to Anime 82. You'll be loved there. You know, it's the official podcast of anime love, unlike Anime Pacific, which is the official podcast of anime hate. I mean, I gotta tell you guys, I'm a real big fan of Anime Pacific. I mean, it's such a cool show. I mean, it's the only anime podcast out there that's I know of that's reviewed by two socialists. Like, we have Dane, who is a true blue red, you know, socialist. And then we have Alex, who's also a socialist, or should I say national socialist? Oh. I mean, Anime Pacific's a great show. I mean, it's so unique. Like, what other anime podcast show has zero anime content? I mean, it's unreal. Like, they're avant-garde. They're newer than new. I mean, what a concept. I mean, an anime podcast with zero anime content? I mean, like, wow, that's far out. Or you have the more traditional anime podcasts like Anime World Order, or dare I say Anime 82, where perhaps we'll talk about classic cell anime from the 1980s, and we may marvel at some of the masterpieces and talk about how many frames per second per minute of classic anime, where on Anime Pacific, we have Dane talking about the number of Vietnamese ladyboy dicks he's seen on his latest adventures. So it's just a little different, you know. It's the same thing, like, you know, cells per minute, ladyboys dicks per second. You know, it's just, it's the same thing, but it's different. You know what I mean? It's like a little bit hipper. So, I mean, Anime Pacific's like so cool. I mean, I'd also like to bring up, like, I know Dane and Alex, I'm sure they have two beautiful, lovely wives, and they're Asians, and that's fine. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm in a band. I'm working hard. I'm, like, trying to get my demo out. I think we have a really good shot of making, like, a great demo, maybe getting a record deal. Like, it's really good stuff, and I'll let you guys know about it when it's out. But I also clean houses, which isn't very glamorous. But what some of you may not know is I did take university, imagine that, and I took religious studies. And looking at Dane and Alex's life and hearing their stories and how they went to Asia and they met two lovely ladies and, you know, they kidnapped them. I mean, married them. It reminded me of a saying that the great philosopher, the Chinese philosopher, mind you, so Dane must, his ears perked up when I said that, Confucius had a great line. It's very, very interesting, and it's full of wisdom. Let me recite it for you. Where is it in the book here, Book of Confucius? Oh, here we are, line 82 from chapter 9. Here we go. This is quoting Confucius, of course. It says, Confucius says, white man who goes to Asia to find a wife cannot get laid in own continent. And I just thought that was so, you know, chock full of wisdom. And I just thought I'd, you know, lay that on the listeners of Anime Pacific because it was so cool. I gotta tell you guys, like, I used to have long hair and, you know, I'm kind of a hippie-ish kind of dude, you know what I'm saying? And often I hear the tales. Dane talks about he's a great recycler. Like, I mean, he's always getting stuff out of the dump. You know, he's pulling stuff out of the dump. I mean, he's breaking windows. He's, you know, he's stealing. I mean, refurbishing things. And, you know, that's great. That is great. I mean, I am so impressed how Dane, you know, when I was finished with his wife, he took her out of the trash. It was nothing. He just cleaned her off. I mean, she was barely used. And he dusted her off and, like, he fixed her up. And, you know, that's great, Dane. I mean, I got to tell you guys, Anime Pacific is a sophisticated show. I mean, we talked to Alex. We talked to Alex, and you know, he always has very profound things to say. He's very wise. You know, he knows politics. He studies all that stuff, and you know, I listen to him. He's very interesting, and I mean, you know, he's very sophisticated. I mean, I'm very impressed with his credentials. I mean, it takes a lot. Like, you have to be very intelligent to do Alex's job. I mean, it's tough. I mean, to say, tickets, please, leaving now, very exciting. I mean, Alex, it's very exciting. I mean, I'm very impressed with your career choices. I think that's awesome. I mean, I think it's so cool that Dane got a pet puppy. I mean, he's such a great guy. I mean, he's such a recyclable. I mean, I never thought about it, Dane. I mean, in the summer, you have a nice, cute puppy. And then in the winter, you have a nice, compact snack. I mean, it's going to be great in the winter in northern China. I mean, you think of everything, Dane. I mean, awesome. Also, I have to tell you, last week I heard Mr. Alex, he had a few not so kind words about me and my comrade, Kent. And, you know, both of us live in the Midwest up here in Canada, in Saskatchewan. And he said that we had raging Saskatchewan accents. I don't know what you're talking about. Take off, you hoser. He also had some negative things to say about Regina and Saskatchewan in general. He said, oh, it looks like a wasteland. It's so flat and boring. Now, Dane and Alex, I mean, you're married to two lovely Asians, ladies, so you should be used to flat things. I mean, come on, guys. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in closing, in all seriousness, I got to tell you guys, I love Anime Pacific. I love the website. I mean, it's a great show with a link to Anime 82. Make sure you check out the Anime Pacific podcast, link to Anime 82. Thank you for listening. And truthfully, in all seriousness, guys, I think you guys are great, and I enjoy your show. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I didn't hold up the show too long, but at least you had someone interesting to listen to on the Anime Pacific podcast. Back to you, Dane and Alex, and it was all in good fun.
That's all, folks. Okay, so this show is called Eden of the East. So, east of where I am, let me see, that's North Korea.
Have you seen this, by the way?
No, but I have expressed interest in seeing it, and it is definitely on my list.
Well, the only reason
it's a Jose show, isn't it?
Jose? No.
That's, you know, the female scene. And
no. No, why'd you say that? Oh, maybe. Now that I think about it. Well, the main character is a woman, or one of the main characters is a woman, but does that make it a Jose show?
Apparently it's listed as a Jose show.
Huh. Well, all right. Yes. I wouldn't think of it like that. If anything, it's I don't know, seinen. No, I wouldn't call it a Jose show. I mean, there's no real sort of heavy romance in it at all.
I think that typifies Jose as more realistic relationships. I'd say shoujo would be, you know, kind of the flowery romantic kind of.
All right. Well, maybe you're right. I don't know. The reason I watched it because it's from Production IG, and I was at their website. One day, I was looking for
a book. Yeah, which is in English, by the way.
Yeah, and I was there surfing over something to watch. Like, boy, I want to see something good. Production IG, Ghost in the Shell, they got to make good stuff. What have they made recently besides that? So this was one of the shows that they listed. So I checked it out. And it's the premise is, you know, everybody knows Japan is having problems these days with, you know, with their economy and birth rate and everything else. And
It is?
Yes.
But what about the bubble, Alex? The bubble!
With the collapse of the bubble, economy, young people can't get jobs, they become NEETs, not in employment, education, or training is what that stands for. So the premise of this show is that a wealthy industrialist gives 12 people 10 billion yen each, each is given a device, basically it's like a cell phone, to essentially it acts as a sort of a concierge. So each of these people, they can dial the sort of concierge with the cell phone and say, I want this. And it'll get done. So they could say, okay, I want a Ferrari. Okay, so they call the concierge, I want a Ferrari. delivered to me right away. And it'll get done. It'll cost a lot of money because, you know, bribes have to be made, people have to be paid off, but it'll get done. So, and it'll get automatically deducted from their 10 billion yen. Each of these people have a mission. The mission is to save Japan. They can do anything they want with the money as long as it is as long as they are heading toward this goal of saving Japan. They can
they make huggable pillows an international phenomenon?
Well, if that is the way they think that they are saving Japan, then that's fine. Each of these people have sort of different ways of that they think they're saving Japan. One girl actually decides to start killing off rapists and pedophiles, essentially.
Oh,
and
wow.
She does it.
This was a light show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, this isn't a Jose show. So she's basically become sort of a serial killer. She rents with her money. She rents this sort of luxury hotel room, and she spends money on sort of pyrotechnics, I guess, to theatrically kill these guys off.
Wow.
But another guy, he decides to round up neets. These neets, who are sort of a big problem, these sort of shut-ins who are in Japan who don't want to leave their room, you know, he sort of rounds them up and sends them off to Saudi Arabia as like slave labor, essentially. Sends them off in like shipping containers as a way of sort of forcibly sort of breaking them out of their stupor. And he does it all with this sort of cell phone that sort of follows his command. And another person takes, I guess he's a cop. And he's sort of blown through all his money. And he's sort of almost very on the edge. He's almost breaking the rules in that he sort of feels that maybe he's not quite striving toward the goal of saving Japan. He's sort of spending the money on sort of booze and, you know, luxury cars and sort of useless stuff, or killing people who sort of get in his way. So he maybe...
I kill girls with tattoos.
Yes. Well, he...
And smokers.
Anyway, he's one of the, you know, so he's sort of... Not, maybe his goal isn't... His path isn't as clear, but he's a sort of a cop, and I guess in his own way, he thinks he's saving Japan. So each of these people have, you know, 10 billion yen, a phone that can allow them to do basically anything. When they run out of money, they get killed. When they
Kind of like Death Note.
Well, maybe when they if they don't, if whoever's in charge of this thing thinks they are not following their goal of saving Japan, they get eliminated. So it's a very intriguing premise. The anime starts off in America, in Washington. One of the two main characters is a girl, Saki Morimi. She is just graduated from university. She's is doing her postgraduate sort of trip to America. She's at the White House taking pictures, you know, doing the tourist thing. She comes across the other main character, Akira. He is one of the 12 people with 10 billion yen. He has lost his...
And how many U.S. dollars is that for our listeners?
Oh, that's, well...
About 20 million, is it?
$100 million.
$100 million, okay. Yeah.
You got to divide by 100. It's like $100
million.
Yeah,
I know. It's...
So, yes, it's about $100 million. So he has lost his memory. So that's the setup. So he's lost his memory. He has this fancy phone. He doesn't quite know what it does. So in a way, this is a way of introducing the audience to the plot, because while he is one of these 12 people, he's finding out he's recovering his memory of what he did before, and he's sort of discovering what this phone can do and what he can do as one of these 12 guys who has this phone and unlimited money.
That's clever in that they avoid any kind of superfluous
explanation.
Yeah.
It's a good way of
it's not force fed.
That's exactly right. So he ends up hooking up with this Saki chick, and basically they go on their make their way back to Japan, and the series involves him discovering who he is, and Saki and her friends helping him achieve his objective of saving Japan ahead of the other 12. The person who saved Japan first lives, everyone else dies, basically. So he has to save Japan before the others do.
That means the girl he likes, you know, they can't, there's that doomed couple element to it, is there?
Well, see, there's no real romance between the two of them. I mean, she sort of likes him, but he's so busy with his other stuff that he doesn't really have time to get involved in the romance. The only aspect is one of Saki's friends in Japan. He likes her, but and he sort of works up the courage to ask her on a date, but that she sort of blithely says okay. But she's so wrapped up in this Akira guy, mysterious guy with unlimited money and sort of superpower ability to with the cell phone that seems to be able to do whatever he wants, that she sort of forgets about this other guy and sort of gets focused on Akira. So that's the only sort of romantic sort of subtext to this whole thing. So that's the basic story. Now the positives, it's a very original story. I got to give it that. I mean, very clever.
When I looked at this, I just thought it was two people in a different country learning to love each other.
Not at all. That's like the first, maybe, not two people in a foreign country, that's like the first 10 minutes. then they go back to Japan. That's why I thought this woman's show. I don't know, man. It's pretty sci-fi heavy.
Ladies like sci-fi too.
I suppose. My ears. The baby crying. Okay.
She's not crying. She's smiling actually. She's saying ba 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 ba.
All right. All right, very nice. Positives. Original story, very original. Interesting characters. Great animation, just like you'd expect from Production IG. Mm-hmm. Negatives. Maybe the fact that the story is just so crazy that you have a hard time buying into it. I mean, it's just so, like, it's so out there. The ability that you have this phone, essentially they can do whatever they want with this phone. I mean, at one point, the main character, he's watching Question Period in the Diet, in the Parliament. And so you got the Prime Minister answering questions from the opposition in the House. And he says, okay, I want the, he basically uses the phone, and he says, okay, make the Prime Minister say, I give up, or something along those lines. And so, sure enough, a few minutes later, he's watching. Somebody comes up to the Prime Minister, and he whispers something in the Prime Minister's ear. The Prime Minister goes over to the podium and says, "I give up." You know, so
that's great.
Yeah, but you know, so you could sort of, and the money is deducted from his cell phone for, you know, bribes or whatever. But you see, you have to buy into this premise. The basic premise of the show that it's possible to have a sort of concierge supercomputer that is so sophisticated that it can basically answer the wishes of whatever the people desire. You know, it's like
buying into ridiculous premises is my specialty. So
all right, yeah. So you got, but once there's a bunch of little things you got to buy into that are hard to swallow throughout the whole series. And it seems like just as soon as you finally, okay, I've bought into that previous crazy premise, I accept it, I'm ready to go on with the rest of the series, there's another sort of crazy thing that happens that you got to buy into, you know? So you got to continually sort of swallow it. Like, for example, right at the beginning, so I won't be spoiling anything. Right at the beginning, you know, this guy, he shows up, this Akira guy, he's naked, buck naked, in front of the White House. And you got to buy into, why is he naked? You know, it's a bit crazy.
You of all people shouldn't care about that.
How'd he get there? Why is he naked? They never really explain why he's naked. But he's just naked in front of the White House.
It's for the girls to count their peas over.
The police sort of question him. And so you're like, okay, I'll buy that. I'll move on. The Saki chick gives him her jacket, because he's naked. gives him her jacket. And he sort of goes off, but she forgets her passport in the jacket. So she's got to chase after him. And she goes to his apartment and goes inside. And I don't want to go into too much detail here, but you've got to like buy into the fact that within minutes she's fully trusting this strange guy, who she found wandering around naked in front of the White House. She's fully trusting this guy, and within minutes, she's flying off back to Tokyo with him.
Well, that's kind of how we met.
It's true.
I met you, and then a year later, I went to Japan with you. So.
But this is like minutes later. And like literally minutes later, it's like, you know, she's lost her passport. She goes to his apartment, and because he was wandering around naked for the White House, police are busting into his apartment or something, and you know, they escape America together. And you know, why would she go off with this strange guy? You know, it makes no sense. I don't know. It's just, but you gotta buy into that, and soon enough, as you go along, you're introduced.
Yes,
to this.
Once
it'll
transcend audacity when it just becomes so
audacious. Well, exactly. You know, you're introduced to the actual cell phone that can magically do anything. So you gotta sort of buy into that, and you get these characters who sort of show up anyway, who have this the technology of her friends there. Her friends in Tokyo run this company. And they have this invention. It's sort of like, I guess it's gonna be like the new Google, that they think, in that the cell phone, you can take a picture of something, you know, like the cell phones have cameras, say, and you can take a picture of something, and the it'll connect to the internet, and through like a massive database, the everything in the picture, it will explain what that is. So let's say you take a picture of a bunch of people standing in front of a building. You'll get text on the screen pointing to the people who are there, giving you the names of those people, links to their home pages, their information about them, their age and everything else. it'll point to the building into the background, telling you what the address is, say. So,
it's like Goku Midnight Eye. I mean, have you seen Goku Midnight Eye?
No.
It's Studio Madhouse again. Yoshiaki Kawajiri directed, done at the same time as Cyber City Oedo, and you know, you love that.
All right. Well, let's not go off on a wave.
He's got a cybernetic eye that can do anything.
All right.
It's just like these cell phones.
Okay, well, you got to buy it, but it's set in the present day, this thing. So you got to buy into this technology, which it's basically impossible. You'd have to buy into facial recognition.
Oh, yes. So
as soon as you sort of swallow that, they keep hitting you with these totally implausible things. Despite that, the story is just so original. The characters are very, I guess, likable. The story's interesting. I bought into it. I'm going to give it a thumbs up. And, oh yeah, by the way, the opening theme, best opening theme, best opening animation that I've seen since You gotta keep your baby away from your microphone, maybe. Like sort of.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Why? Because my favorite rock band, Oasis, does the theme music. It takes one. It takes "Falling Down," one of their singles from their latest album. They're broken up now, so their last album. And it. They've basically done a almost like a music video for it in a way, because you've got this awesome song, and you've got the production IG animators have done a sensational job in wrapping this song with some spectacular visuals.
Well, you know, so, if that gets released in the US, the Oasis song probably won't come with it, because there's quite a few animes that come out. There's quite a few animes that come out. With sort of famous songs from famous groups, but the rights are just for Japan. Just like Speedgrapher, they had Duran Duran do the opening, "Girls on Film," which was awesome. But when it got released, they just changed it to some, you know, bam, to some generic song.
Right. Well, that's too bad. I hope not. I mean, I guess Funimation has the rights to this.
Well, Funimation are the ones that released Speedgrapher also.
Well, I hope they're able to include it, because the beginning is just so good, and the music, the way they've done the animation to the song is just spectacular. It's right up there with my other favorite, the intro to Darker Than Black season 2 there, which okay. I listened to incessantly. So big thumbs up from me for the intro, and a thumbs up. Not 5 stars, but a thumbs up for the show, Eden of the East, despite the craziness.
I will. I'll watch that after I finish Sword and No Ken. So, Eden of the East, thumbs up from Alex. So, thus ends another stellar episode of Anime Pacific. Shorter than the previous ones, but we've been busy, and I've actually got to go out momentarily. So we were pumping this one out just for you, the listeners.
That's right. And
grateful bastards.
Well, and if you are grateful, send us an email to anipacific@gmail.com or post at our website, which is... Go ahead, Dane. Take it away.
AnimePacific.blogspot.com.
That's right.
And don't forget to check out our blog at anipac.blogsum.com. And I am just checking up a paddle, and I just realized that for Anipac, if you go over the link, it says, "As seen on To Catch a Predator."
As seen on To Catch a Predator.
Hilarious.
But and shouldn't that be Anime Pacific? Binu? I mean, that's not us.
Oh, come on. Poor Binu.
Yes. All right. Well, yes. Anyways, so
and,
email us.
Also, okay, go if ahead. You are an anime podcaster and we do not link to your show or we haven't listened to your show, give us an email. I mean, we're not bitching you or avoiding you. Or anything, we're quite happy to share the love. So
yeah, and if you're and plus plug us, we want to get more ratings, and we're too lazy to do a commercial.
That's right. You have Kaori's express permission to plug Alex because it's an addiction and you just can't.
Quiet.
Yes.
I walked into that one. All right. Anyway, so that's it for this week.
Yep. So bye bye everybody. Bye bye.
Bye. We can dance if we want to, we can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find.
can act like we come from out of this world. Leave the Rio one far behind. We'll meet from our hearts to our feet and surprise them with a victory cry. Say, we can act if we want to. If we don't, nobody will. And you can act real rude and totally removed, and I can act like an imbecile. Say, we can dance, we can dance. Everything's out of control. We can dance, we can dance. We're doing it from pole to pole. We can dance, we can dance. Everybody look at your hands. We can dance. We can dance, everybody's taking the chance. It's safe to dance, oh, it's safe to dance. Yes, it's safe to dance. We can dance if you want to. We've got all your life in mind. As long as we abuse it, never gonna lose it. Everything will work out right. I say, we can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Because your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. I say, we can dance, we can dance. Everything's out of control. We can dance, we can dance. We're doing it from pole to pole. We can dance, we can dance. Everybody look at your hands. We can dance, we can dance. Everybody's taking a chance. Oh, it's safe to dance. Yes, it's safe.